Joining us on the line now from the UK is Ian Hawkins. He's a writer turned comedian, presenter and award-winning public speaker. He's the co-author of Insider Secrets of Public Speaking. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning.
Hi, thanks very much for joining us.
It's delightful to be here. I've literally just come off stage from doing a speech about future-proofing. So it's, I'm still on my little adrenaline high from talking to audience of about 50 or 60 people about how to survive the future.
Oh, wow. How do we survive the future?
Well, I'm always quite impressed when I survive doing a speech. Well, how do you survive the future? Flexibility. Forward planning, flexibility, having a little bit of imagination as to what's going to come at you and trying to ride the waves or better yet, making waves of your own.
Mm. Oh, interesting. So how do you get involved in public speaking? How and why do people hire you to do a speech?
Well, people hire me to do a speech because I think I have a very good connection with the audience, and that is what I would say the main thing is. My background is really, I was an agent for speakers for 5 years. So it would be, I would book people for after-dinner speeches, I'd book comedians, I'd book business speakers. And then it slowly dawned on me that, you know, I write for other comedians. I can stand on stage and produce sentences coming out of my mouth with, you know, some reasonable clarity and accuracy. And I thought, well, perhaps I should be doing this myself rather than just taking 15% of what I'm paying other people to do it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I've always been interested in people who write for comedians and things because it always makes me wonder whether the comedians themselves are actually that funny if they've got someone writing all their jokes.
Well, here's the thing, it's not about the words, I found. What I would do is I would write jokes for a comedian. Okay? I'd say, oh, therefore, all I need to do is recite these gags and I will be as funny as, you know, fill in the blank. And it was a really fascinating experience to be on stage telling a joke which you know has got a really good laugh when a big-name comic has done it, and it's falling absolutely flat when you do it yourself. And that is really interesting because we mentioned it in the book, but there are three things about a good speaker, and it doesn't matter whether you're presenting the annual figures or whether you're doing the best man speech or whether you're a stand-up comedian. There are three absolutely golden principles. One is having authority, so looking like you're supposed to be there. One is authenticity, you know, being yourself, not trying to be someone else. And the other thing is thinking of the audience. What is it that the audience wants from you? And is it to be saying nice things about your daughter if she's getting married? Is it saying, look, the figures are terrible, but we'll be okay? Or is it about just being entertaining?
Mm.
So giving the audience, not quite giving the audience what they want, but certainly filling their expectations.
So when you're writing for someone else, you have to really understand their voice, presumably.
It's a really interesting thing that I do tend to get into the mindset of people. The longest part of the process is always understanding what somebody's voice is and trying to listen to them, trying to listen to what they've done before, watching footage of them. I used to write the news quiz on Radio 4, and that was, I hesitate to use the word easy, but it was straightforward because I'm a fan of the show and I knew what the form of the joke was. I knew what it sounded like, and sure enough, the scripts came back with crossings out and markings on them, and underneath it all it said, oh, you've captured Sandy Toksvig's tone spot on. So I thought, good. Job done.
Yeah, absolutely. She's great, isn't she, Sandy Toksvig? I think she's brilliant.
I think she's absolutely terrific, and she does have one of this thing, which is that she understands what the audience wants. You know, she's a bit of a crowd pleaser. She's got absolute authority. You know, she's a really good chair of the news quiz. I think she was going to be chair of Have I Got News For You at one point, but they said, no, we couldn't possibly have a woman chairing a panel show. The very idea. And, of course, she does it brilliantly on the news quiz. And she is completely of herself. You know, there's something very unique about her and very likable. And I don't know if it's radio or what, but you do get the feeling you know what sort of person she is from very few words she has to speak, that you understand where she's coming from.
Mm. Do you ever feel like, I know obviously now you're doing it yourself more, which is what you're saying, but when you are writing for other people, if you're writing for someone who's doing a stand-up show or a chat show or whatever, and they're, you know, getting all the laughs, getting all the glory, if you like, from your material, do you get a kick out of that, or do you think that could be me?
it ebbs and it flows. if I write for somebody else, I have a thing, which is I never do any job without my whole heart. And here's a typical example. I was doing a show in Lincoln University, which is miles and miles out of London, and we were coming back, me and a couple of other comedians. It was 3 o'clock in the morning, and one of the others turned to me and said, "Ian, do you think we should have done this? Do you think it was worth it?" And I said, "I knew we'd be late back tonight when I took this job, and therefore I'm not going to complain about it. I might not do it again, but I'm not going to complain about it now we're here." I am completely of the mindset that once you've agreed to do a job, you do it with your whole heart, or you don't bother doing it. And so I, with that attitude in mind, I genuinely enjoy sitting at the back of an audience, hearing them laugh at somebody else delivering my jokes.
Mm.
And I mean, I was a writer for 10 years before I stepped on a stage. And I couldn't have done that if I didn't enjoy that moment. And also, it's kind of flattering. When you're standing there, and you've got somebody the likes of Rob Brydon telling your gags and getting big laughs, you do think, oh, this is nice.
I've got
all the benefit. I get the paycheck, and I can still go home on the bus.
Yeah, that's a good point. So looking at your book then, Insider Secrets of Public Speaking, it's one of those things when we talk about fears and things that people are afraid of, you know, you get your spiders and your snakes, but a lot of people are afraid of public speaking. Why do you think that is?
I think it's a problem of authority, and it comes down to this whole idea. When you walk on stage, it's an act of leadership, and the whole room is resting on you as a performer. And if you stand there and you say the wrong word, or you trip over yourself, or your notes fall to the floor, you know, the person at the front of the room in the spotlight is the absolute linchpin. And if you show any wobbling or you fall apart, then audiences like to be told what to do, and they don't like to have to guess or to work things out for themselves. And it is a real sense of responsibility, and you can feel that you look very foolish. Interesting, I wrote this book with Nadine D'Arezzo, and we agreed on pretty much everything. We come from very different backgrounds. I'm comedy, entertainment, she is business and presenting. And I wrote a thing in the book about I need a few notes before I go on, because it gives me some edge. I like that. It gives me some energy and it gives me some pep. And she emailed me back and said, "Well, I do business presentations every day. If I had nerves, I'd be a complete wreck. I couldn't possibly go on stage if I had stage fright. That would be ridiculous." And so we agreed that between us, there are two different approaches. One is to have that nervous energy and that pep and that edge, and the other is to be laid back and professional. And what I say to people who suffer really badly with nerves is make sure you know what you're doing. You know, walk through it. And also understand that the issue you have with nerves is one of being in control and being the leader. And as soon as you adopt that leadership mindset and know what the job is you have to do, and the job can be as simple as telling people where the fire escapes are, once you know what those things are, the nerves become channeled into a useful expression of energy.
That makes a lot of sense. Like, so much of it, I suppose, has to do with confidence and the audience having confidence in you. I guess it's like if you're watching a singer, if you know that the singer is really good and always hits the right notes, you can feel really relaxed watching them because you just know that they're good, and you can get that quite soon, I guess, after watching them sing. But if you watch someone sing and they keep going off key and they don't reach the high notes, it's uncomfortable, isn't it? You exactly. you're waiting for it to go wrong again. I suppose it's the same with the speaker.
Well, Nadine and I do a lot of coaching for clients who want to improve their public speaking, and we coach people from all backgrounds. I mean, I've done Olympic athletes, we've done business people, we even coached a chef and a bartender earlier this week. But Nadine and I were talking to this lady, and she was in management, and she said, "Oh, I think people think I'm really confident, but I don't feel confident. What should I do about it?" And I said, "Well, if you don't feel, if there's 300 people in the room, there's only one person that isn't enjoying the show, does that matter? I mean, I know it's you, I'd like you to feel better and enjoy the job more, but if the only person that doesn't feel that they're in safe hands is you, who cares? I mean, literally one, you, just you."
Yeah.
I think that's actually quite a good ratio. And, you know, the old saying, you know, fake it till you make it. if you can fake sincerity, or in this case confidence, you can fake anything. And as long as the audience doesn't know you're faking it doesn't really matter. And I think as soon as you learn that, then that is the key to getting out of debilitating nerves.
Yeah. I think a lot of people manage to, unless it's something they enjoy, obviously, or they're forced to do it through their job or through their career, some people will, men, I think, primarily, will get through their lives possibly without having to do a speech, apart from they might be called up for that best man speech or the father of the bride speech at a wedding. I've met many men who said that was just the most traumatic time, because not only is there pressure of doing a speech, but it's kind of looked upon at these speeches as supposed to be really funny. Any tips for men in that situation?
Whether you're a man or a woman, I think you owe it to yourself to look up the Mary Beard lecture on women's voices in public. I don't think that the future of public speaking is getting a lot more female friendly, and certainly I get kind of uncomfortable if I go on a bill of stand-up comedians and there are no women on it. I just think that's odd and unrepresentative, and it also doesn't really present a balanced bill. If you want to know what makes you funny, I'll tell you what doesn't make you funny, and that is trying too hard to be funny. So,
yeah.
Actually, Nadine came up with the best advice, which was, don't try and make people laugh, just try and make them smile. And because, I mean, you can make people laugh if you fell over your shoes on the way up to the stage. it's not the kind of laugh you
which if
want.
All else fails on the way back, yeah. You could just trip up, couldn't you?
You could, but the point is, you might go away and say, I got a laugh, but is it the kind of laugh you want?
No.
If you're at a wedding or something, it comes back to this idea of doing your job, okay? I say to people, if you're a best man, don't worry about the speech, okay? You're being a friend to the groom, okay? You've got 100 jobs to do. Make sure you do all of those really well. Be a good friend, okay? And when it comes to the speech, it's arguably not that important. I know there's lots of eyes on you, but try and make people smile. Try and make people understand why you're this person's friend and why it's an honour. And there's only one real dope in a best man speech, which is that the bride is fantastic, but she only has one fault, which is her terrible taste in men.
Exactly. Good one. Well, if people want to get a copy of your book, it's called Insider Secrets of Public Speaking, and it's by Ian Hawkins, who we've been chatting to today. Ian, thank you so much for joining us.
Can I just say, if anyone out there has a question about public speaking, because I'm all the way over in the UK, you can find me on Twitter at SmartMrHawkins. And if you have a question about public speaking, find me at Smart Mr. Hawkins, and I will endeavour to get an answer back to you.
Oh, fantastic. At Smart Mr. Hawkins, absolutely.
Smart Mr. Hawkins. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Ian. Take care.
Have a gorgeous day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.